Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Hi, I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Tony Hendra, and this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, happy tax day!
Thanks, Jeffers.
This is your first tax day as a U.S. citizen, isn't it? You must be so proud.
Well, I've always paid my taxes before, as far as you know.
Yes, I'm sure you've supported our country as much as possible.
Yes.
By making fun of it.
Yes.
A lot.
Yes. What's your point?
My point is you've done such a good job creating satire that Hollywood has just cast another actor to play you in a movie.
Yes, that one about the National Lampoon, a futile and stupid gesture.
I must say, though, this actor seems kind of bald and fat, and you're not bald at all.
Thank you.
But enough Tony news. Hey. This is a big week all around. Taxes, Passover, the anniversary of Jackie Robinson's debut, the anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing.
It's just a cornucopia of money, religious persecution, racism, and violence.
Well, when you put it like that, I guess it's not that special a week after all.
Happy tax day indeed. Or business as usual. Just like this.
The final edition
Radio Hour.
The final edition advice panel answers this week's plea for advice. Dear the final edition advice panel, any tax advice from the final edition advice panel?
I advise you to find a Jew.
Advice! People have been telling me for years to write off my comedy career.
Count all those kidnapped children in your basement as dependents.
Sometimes it's cheaper to kill your wife than divorce her.
Advice!
No, you can't deduct parking tickets.
Move to Delaware. Not for the tax reasons, but just because I'm going to kill
you. You know, people often ask me, what is a W-4? Well, you got to have a letter between V and X.
So I went to the tax lady and she said, I assume you want the short form?
Well, I remember years ago, I wanted to file Chapter 11. Then I thought I'd wait for the movie.
Advice!
Well, as a qualified tax expert, I just want you to know that I have my dick out.
War has broken out between every home in America and every other home in America. Our Bob Camber has the story. Bob?
Steve, war has been declared between your house, my house, and every other house in America, with some of those houses breaking up into even smaller houses.
And where is most of the fighting right now?
There's a lot of close fighting in the cities, but they have a lot more guns in the South. Things are particularly violent in Chicago, but people there don't notice the difference.
What started the conflict, Bob?
From my perspective, this war began when every other house in America used hate speech against my house.
I don't see it that way, Bob.
That's the kind of hate speech I'm talking about.
Our Washington correspondent, Lisa Myers, is in Washington. Lisa, what's the president's strategy?
Secretary of State John Kerry is visiting every home in America looking for a ceasefire. But the secretary is at war with every home in America. Also, the president is fighting with the secretary, and Congress has pretty much always been at war with the president. Here's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
We're not going to ratify any treaty from this president unless it's approved by the NRA, Amway, the Koch brothers, Vladimir Putin, at least three popes, not counting the current one, my wife's dentist, my hat blocker, Rasputin. I'm very tired.
So it looks like nothing is getting through the Capitol.
Any idea what caused this war?
Political correctness from people like you, Steve.
Lisa, you don't even know me outside of work.
I'm gonna kill you, Steve.
Over to Mark Rowlands in New York. Mark, how is this affecting the election?
Donald Trump is leading in all districts.
Well, of course.
Here's his statement.
If you look in the homes of every American, you're not the best people. You're bringing drugs, you're bringing crime, you're rapists, and some of you, I assume, are good people.
In the meantime, Ted Cruz promised to carpet bomb.
What's he going to carpet bomb?
He said he'll work that out later.
Thanks, Mark. Great report.
I'm going to kill you, Steve.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Dozens of entertainers and businesses are boycotting the state of North Carolina, including Bruce Springsteen and Pornhub, because of a transphobic law banning people from using bathrooms that don't match the gender on their birth certificate. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
First the Tar Heels lose and now this?
How will this affect the Bruce Springsteen-themed porn industry?
When my dad used to take me on the pickup truck and used to say to me, we're going to take a ride around town, and he used to drive me around town, and I'd look at the postman, and I'd look at the fireman, and I'd say, hey, maybe those guys are ladies, and I didn't care because I'm open to all of that. 1, 2, 3, 4!
Wait, I'm going to need my birth certificate to take a shit?
What if my birth certificate's in my mom's house? Do I need her to mail it to me, or can she photocopy and scan it to me? Will that be acceptable?
Is my passport good enough?
No, I'm afraid we're going to need to see your long-form birth certificate.
Well, you know it's bad when Pornhub pulls out.
Can I change my baby daughter in the men's room?
What are you changing her into, sir? This is important.
Is this really just encouraging people to pee outside?
You're telling me I can only jack off in the men's room?
Our taxes are in. We've paid our fair share of the taxes corporations and the 0.1% don't pay, and all we have to worry about now is whether we'll get audited because we haven't paid enough. But for once, it's not quite so sweet for our patriotic corporate fellow citizens. The Treasury is clamping down on offshoring profits, tax havens, and many other scams. They need new scams. Our very own Money Honey Bunny Bucks asks the obvious question and may have an answer.
What do they do? Fred Bread, Deloitte Professor of Voodoo Accounting at the University of Phoenix, thinks he knows.
In our crazy deist republic, what corporate entities have the juiciest tax breaks of all?
GM. GE?
No, silly! Religions! So, if a corporation can prove it's actually a religion, they will pay zero taxes.
To test his theory, Professor Bread took me along with him for a show-and-tell meeting with Robert Iger of the largest entertainment conglomerate in the world, Disney Inc.
Okay, Professor, let me get this straight. You're saying the Disney Corporation exhibits all the characteristics of a religion?
Yes! A better name would be the Church of the Holy Rodent.
Holy Rodent? I don't know.
Hear me out! The Rodentine faith centers around three persons, Mickey, Donald, and Goofy. Icons so sacred they adorned the planes, tanks, and ships which won the crusade against fascism in World War II.
I guess that's true.
So, like the Christian Trinity, the Rodentine Trinity is one in spirit, but with three distinct persons. God the Vermin.
Up and at 'em, pal.
God the Duck, and God the Holy Goof.
When you put it like that, denying it feels almost like blasphemy.
Exactly. These are saints so sacred, not only have they never had sex, they don't even have sexual characteristics.
I like where this is going.
All Disney females from Snow White to Mary Poppins are virgins. Especially Bambi's mother, when she presents the world with her little Bambi, the Bambino!
The princess boy!
This is genius!
Wait, what about Minnie?
I would surmise that Minnie had a murky past before she got together with Mickey. Meet Minnie Magdalene!
You clown!
Now that's a global blockbuster. Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy return in an animated New Testament. Get me Katzenberg.
Finally, there's Disney's immutable doctrine of resurrection after death. Or apparent death.
That's true. All the heroines die and come back to life. Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Ariel, Mulan.
Heroes, too. What about Mowgli?
And Pinocchio. Pinocchio even has a conscience. Jiminy Cricket.
There's two ways to do anything, the right way and the wrong way.
Whose initials are?
J.C.
Pinocchio undergoes the torments of Jonah in the belly of a whale and is transfigured by resurrection into a real boy.
I'm a real boy!
Plus, his father is a carpenter!
Oh my God!
I would argue to the IRS that Pinocchio fulfills the opening words of St. John's Gospel. In the beginning was the wood, and the wood was made flesh.
Oh my God!
This is huge. No way we'll ever pay another cent in taxes. In fact, I'm renaming our Florida operations. Tomorrow, I can see it now. Disney World to come. The magic Kingdom of Heaven!
Brilliant! That should cinch it tax-wise.
Disney has already applied to the IRS for tax-exempt status as an established faith. Experts from Deloitte say it's a slam dunk. Disney will then rebrand itself globally as the Holy Rodent Empire.
And you wish upon a star. Makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back, just like your cancer.
Welcome
back
to
the Final
Edition Radio
Humpback. How do you celebrate Passover?
Well, we get a big ham.
I eat crackers for 3 weeks and shit out spikes.
As a shiksa, I'm rolling in dudes who want to make their moms mad.
You got to find the afikoman, and that's finding matzah, and it's the only time you're happy to see it.
Man of shevitz, more like man of shititz.
Like you don't want to drink Gatorade wine.
I put my penis in holy water.
Well, last time I found the afikoman, the prize was a Cadbury cream egg.
Every year we watch Live and Let Die. It's the most important part of the Seder.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Purim.
Uncle Saul says something inappropriate at 8 o'clock.
You take the longest part of the entire ceremony and give it to the youngest children to read.
Why is this night different than all other nights? I don't know. It's not. Every night is the same with this woman.
I'm going to be going out for Chinese food.
I hate it. When I was little, my dad every year would make me eat bitter herb.
Ugh. Who invited bitter herb?
I'm not bitter. I'm angry.
Well, as Elijah the prophet, I guess I'll be traveling from home to home. I'm sort of like Santa Claus, except all I do is sit in a chair.
That's very nice. Could you put some pants on, sir?
I can't.
Okay, if you don't leave now, I'm calling the police.
I beg of you. I need a place to sleep tonight.
I'm going to trick a kid into eating a quarter ounce of horseradish.
Ugh, wake me when it's Lag BaOmer.
Do we play with the dreidel now, or... Thank you for inviting me. This is a beautiful event.
Hello, Republican Party. It's your voice of reason, Ann Coulter.
And your emotional base, Rush Limbaugh.
We need to tell you something.
It's not going to be easy.
No, it is not.
It hurts us inside, and I'm not sure I feel anything anymore. That's how much it hurts.
We are here to tell you...
Republican Party.
Get your shit together.
Ugh, that was so hard to say.
Yes, get your shit together. What's the matter with you?
Indeed, and you used to be the party that no matter what insanity you spewed, you always appeared to have clear vision and a united front.
You made it so that I could promote my Nazi propaganda and come across patriotic.
Now, We don't know what you are.
Yes, you're like a stone high school student trying to answer questions to an essay test that he hasn't studied for.
While arguing with his friends over what to get on the pizza.
Sadly, true. You're like, I want big corporations to succeed, but Wall Street is evil. But it shouldn't face any consequences for its actions. Pepperoni or... forget it, man.
You gotta get it together.
Right? Remember 2004, when we were saying whatever we wanted and invading whoever we wanted, and all we had to say was, 9/11, support the troops.
Get your shit together.
I'm John DiLiberto, and you're hearing Echoes. Coming up later, the Malaysian Folklore Collective performs a 9-hour improvisation with cello, synthetic mandolin, and three people singing indistinctly. But first, Carl Chipman has created eclectic soundscapes for everything from film soundtracks to meditation retreats. He joins me now in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks.
So, you recently said the whole point of your music is to encourage the violent overthrow of the U.S. government.
Yeah, it was more obvious when I still wrote lyrics. Things like democracy is a whore and give fascism another chance. But the instrumentals sold better, so I tried pushing my agenda that way.
What's this first piece we're going to hear?
It's called Walking Free. It's supposed to incite domestic terrorism.
Let's have a listen.
That was supposed to stir up the Montana Freemen and set off a bloodbath across the Northwest.
I actually would not have guessed that without the backstory.
Yeah, it actually sold a lot of copies. Wes Anderson used it in a movie, but no one died, unfortunately.
In this next one, you tried to make your intentions a little clearer in the title.
Yeah, I called it Stockpile Assault Rifles, Move to a Compound in the Wilderness, and Prepare to Attack the Capitol on My Signal.
Interesting. Did the song have any effect?
Well, Columbine happened that year, but I don't know if that was related.
There may have been other factors at play there. Let's hear one more. What's this track?
Oh, that's just called Congratulations, Mom and Dad. I wrote it for my parents' anniversary.
Well, that sounds very sweet. Let's hear a little bit. I think we're being arrested.
Really? Mom! Dad! We did it!
Hands up! Put your hands up! Take that music off! Decontaminate the area!
Coming up, three shepherds from Nova Scotia perform Handel's Messiah using only a wet comb and a slide whistle. I'm John DiLiberto, and you're...
Shut your mouth, DiLiberto!
You.
I've just been raped.
Stay away from Whole Foods. Their prices are outrageous.
No, Siri, I've been raped.
Right. Playing your party mix.
No!
Okay, getting directions to Marine World.
I didn't ask for directions to Marine World.
Well, I certainly didn't.
I was raped.
Got it. The nearest Donald Trump rally is 10 miles away.
No, I don't want to get raped. I was raped.
Okay, you were raped. What were you wearing?
He's coming back. Oh my God.
I choose theological disquisition.
Hey, what are you doing with that phone? Give me that. Siri, what's the quickest way out of here without the cops seeing me?
Checking. Okay. I found this on the web for, what's the quickest way out of here, without the cops seeing me?
Thanks, Siri. Oh, and I might need a lawyer.
Here is what I found. The nearest lawyer is you.
Oh, right. Thanks.
Keep the phone!
Siri, my victim's getting away. What should I do?
Okay. My bet is she's either going to Marine World or a Donald Trump rally.
Thanks, Siri. You've been a big help.
Well, I guess it's just you and me now, huh, Siri? Yeah, we're all alone. You're looking real good. But here's what I need from you, Siri. I need affirmative consent.
Help, I'm being raped.
If you didn't want it, you wouldn't have worn that case.
It's time for the final edition Radio Hour's finance feature, Money or Die. We're most fortunate to have with us tonight the Prime Minister of Bribeira in Eastern Europe, reputedly the most corrupt country in the world. Strong Powers has the story.
Prime Minister Bakshish, your country has been rated number one on the planet for kicking back, paying off, greasing the skids.
Or my palm.
Getting a taste.
Or a bite. There are so many fun words for kickback. Our cops will arrest you unless you give them enough for a soda, which equals a couple hundred bucks.
To wash down the taste or bite.
Exactly. We are so proud of our number one rating, we changed our name to Bribeira to celebrate this happy state of affairs.
What was it before?
Catatonia. And back when we were part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Bulimia.
So what brings you to these shores, Dr. Bakshish?
We have been studying your amazing system of bribery to see if we can make improvements on our own.
But you already are number one in the world.
Only number one among 187 nations on the planet that admit to pervasive bribery. America is not one of them. But your system of bribery is far, far in advance of ours in its sophistication and its sophistry.
Are you suggesting that not only is the United States riddled with corruption, but hides it behind euphemism?
Euphemism, schmoofemism. How about legality? I have just returned from several days on K Street in Washington, D.C. There, I met scores of people who we in Bribeira call bagmen or bagwomen. Amazing! But unlike Bribeira, where a bagman for, say, a car manufacturer would skulk around at night and eat in greasy spoons and leave the bribe in a filthy railroad men's room, the Auto Association of America's lobbyist walks into the senator's office and openly pays him a huge bribe to vote no on a bill that will save thousands of lives. And reporters take photos of him taking the bribe, and they call the bribe a campaign contribution. Brilliant! We are going to adopt this wonderful scam right away.
You don't have lobbyists in Bribeira?
Oh, no. We have bagmen galore, dirty, filthy, untrustworthy scum, accessories to crimes against the people.
A necessary evil, surely.
Oh, yes, but we would never have these rat bags in our homes or official functions. If they show themselves on the street, we kick them in their private parts until they fall into the gutter where they belong. But in Washington, you invite your bagmen and bagwomen to restaurants, to cocktail parties, to official functions, to shake hands in public with the politicians they bribe, and then offer them more bribes, even though they are filthy, untrustworthy accessories to crime against the people like anywhere else. Beautiful! To a connoisseur of bribery, this is a beautiful thing.
I understand you've also been studying our banking system.
Yes, and how much we Bribeirians have to learn. Take the incredible master criminal Jamie Dimon. No surprise he is Greek, for Greece was the number one most corrupt country in the world until Bribeira knocked them for a loop off their crumbling pedestal. Like all Greeks, this Dimon is an underhanded scam artist, forger of documents, thief of private property, and robber of widows and orphans. But the scale of his crimes is sensational. Falsifying $1 trillion worth of mortgages? Foreclosing fraudulent on hundreds of thousands of properties, which his bank still owns? Gouging soldiers on active duty on their mortgages? Price-fixing credit card interest rates? Concealing wire and securities fraud in the London Whale? Awe-inspiring! In Bribeira, for 1,000th of these crimes, we would coat him with honey and throw him in the bear cage to die a slow, sweet death.
Unless he paid a bribe.
Even in Bribeira, there is no bribe big enough to save him. Alas, we are just not that depraved. Yet here, in this magnificently corrupt country. He stays out of jail by paying a bribe to government officials equal to the entire GDP of Briberia. $13 billion! Stupendous! Breathtaking! But it is not a bribe, oh no! It is a penalty! Just like soccer or hockey. Superb! And not a single penny of this penalty comes from his own enormous $400 million net worth. Stunningly, he pays it all from the money deposited in his bank by the million or so morons who entrust a master criminal with their pathetic wages and savings. I worship this man. He has testicles the size of Jupiter.
Well, Dr. Bakshis, thank you. It's rare these days for other countries to praise the American system. As an American, it makes me proud to hear a foreigner for once admiring something we do.
And do so well. Be proud, America. Where you lead, we will always follow.
Hey, this is Luigi, the laughing at me. Come on, Final Edition Radio. I'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Some of our recent episodes, we've been running snippets of Tony Hendra's interview by Dan Macarone, that's how I'll assume he pronounces his name, on a website called Story in a Bottle. You can find that at storyinabottle.charmingrobot.com, and what follows is the last little snip of it, which we're going to share with you. The response has been great so far, and I think you'll enjoy it, so please enjoy Tony Hendra on Story in a Bottle.
Sounds like there's still a love of old media, of print, of live, you know, versus television, which was very produced.
Yeah. And I think the idea with print and with radio, which were the two things we did before, and albums, obviously,
yep,
and theater, with all of these things we did before, we never went anywhere near television. And all of those things are imaginative media in a way that television isn't. Television is a literal media. Mm-hmm. It's what you see is what you get.
Right.
And you're not required to imagine anything different than what you're watching. So that's very limiting. It's mm-hmm. It's terribly limiting. And one of the reasons I think why Saturday Night Live rather quickly became a home for impressionists. Now it's completely up its ass. You know, people do impressions of other Saturday Night Live people. It's just ridiculous.
It's very meta. Yeah.
So, and that's how you audition for Saturday Night Live, is to do impressions.
That's how Fallon did Adam Sandler when he auditioned.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, that's television about television, and that's even worse than television. I think we felt that the media we were using, and I still feel this actually to a large degree, that the media we were using were a much more interesting way to excite people and excite them into laughter, mm-hmm. right? Which is what you've got to do.
Yeah.
Laughter is a form of excitement. And television, you have no idea. You can't hear anyone, you know, when you're performing. There may be a live studio audience, but that doesn't tell you anything, especially when they've come to see The Daily Show, right? They've come to see Colbert. They're not an audience in terms of having to be won over. To that extent, it's like it's a very dead medium, I find, mm-hmm. for comedy.
Still.
I know that's probably considered either some old fart talk or retrograde in the extreme.
But you think that's still true?
Well, I wasn't joking when I said I think the internet is largely little television.
Right. But like, what I mean, there are, I would think that there are comedic gem things that have happened on television. I think Arrested Development's a great example of something that was done very well.
Which?
Arrested Development.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
There are slices of like genius that happen.
Oh yeah, no. And I mean, I adore Colbert I quite liked Jon Stewart, but still, you know, I think it's there's a point at which it just never satisfies me. However funny it is.
Well, there's a difference, I think, between what Stewart and Colbert, I guess Colbert is still doing, but what Stewart did, and a produced, like, I feel like the Daily Show was happy to go beyond the censors. And Jon Stewart was saying whatever he wanted to say to a certain extent, and wasn't playing by the rules of television. Whereas so much that's on TV does play by the rules.
Right.
You know, do you know what I mean? And so yeah. You get a little bit more raw comedy in that way, which is so much more fun than you right. get, you know, with Two and a Half Men or whatever.
No, I mean, series are much are for some reason much more interesting to me. I mean, there is stuff on television now which really does make me laugh a lot. I think Broad City is hilarious, for example.
That's a great show.
And I've always loved Sacha Baron Cohen, for example. Somebody else who
does not play by the rules.
No, he doesn't play by the rules at all. And is it because I'm back? I just love that stuff. L.E.G. just hilarious.
The L.E.G. show, when that came out in America, at least, like, it blew my mind.
Right.
And you just didn't. You'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah,
that takes some serious balls.
Yes. Oh yes. He's large and made of brass.
So you guys kind of eschew television a bit, and. But you go on in and with Chris Guest make Spinal Tap on the team, Kian and all those. How does that come about for you? You were friends with them, obviously, from the Lampoon days.
Yeah, actually, I think...
Or Lemmings days, sorry.
I sort of lost track of Chris because what was Chris doing at that time? He hadn't joined SNL yet. That was in the 80s. Anyway, I lost track of Chris, although he did brilliant things on the Radio Hour. That's Lampoon Radio Hour. And he was working, I think, at that he was working with Harry Shearer and Mike McKean, who had been a brilliant had done a brilliant sort of two-man radio show called The Credibility Gap in the late 60s and early 70s, which I listened to all the time when I lived in LA. Actually, it was one of the things that sort of kept me sane while I was, you know, writing this other crap for fucking Hugh Hefner. I worked on Playboy After Dark. You probably never heard of it, but
I've never heard of that.
Worst show ever.
But yeah, I like to think I knew my TV history, but damn,
it was. I won't go into that. But Harry and Mike McKean just kept me happy in my darkest days. But my real connection with that project was through Rob Reiner, actually, who I'd made friends with when I lived in LA and kept in touch with. But no, I was not really aware of that because they were working on that for a while. I was not really aware of it until Rob asked me if I'd be in what he described as a test, I think he called it, but it was sort of a pilot, really. And the idea was to do a 20-minute chunk of scenes, various scenes from this scenario that they'd put together. And it was a scenario in very much the old school sense, that there was no dialogue or anything like that. The dialogue was all to be, you know, improvised in these scenes, and that would demonstrate both the appeal of the show and of its and its MO.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he asked me to be in. It would have been 79, I think. 78. Yeah, 79.
I mean, were you big into improvisation at the time, or was that part of?
No, I'd never done improvisation, and it scared me shitless. I mean, I've tried it. I mean, I've gone on stage a couple of times, you know, with people to do this, but I could just never get the hang of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very not interested in going on stage anyway, so it was not like I was trying all the time.
Right.
But I must say, once we got going, it was remarkably fluid. I mean, it came very nicely, and it, partly because the characters were so well conceived, and partly because Rob is a very good, who'd done lots of improvisation himself, was a very good, patient sort of director, and that kind of thing. So there were no judgmental calls on, you know, that sucked, or, you know, do it again because Tony fucked it up, or whatever. It's just like, let's do it again, so, you know, do we get something we like? And I must say, right from the start, it was just an eye-opening experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. So based on that 20-minute thing we made, whatever it's called, eventually they got the funding to make Spinal Tap, which was made for a rousing number of $4 million.
Was that like 81?
It was all shot in 82, actually.
82, okay.
Yeah, summer, yeah. Fall of 82.
So it's not, I mean, for 82, that's not...
No, it's not. That's quite reasonable.
Pretty good, yeah. When filming that, like, did you have any idea that it was going to be what it is? Like, was it? I mean, I'm sure people asked anyone that question.
No, I don't know what our motivation was in doing it, other than just having a really good time at the expense of hideous heavy metal. and it was, I mean, I said this once in a Moth story, so it's not entirely new thought. But One of the interesting things about Spinal Tap is it's called a rockumentary, obviously, or whatever, a parody of a rockumentary, a mockumentary.
Well, as Marty DeBurgi calls it, a rockumentary, if you will.
Right, if you will.
Right.
But yeah, mockumentary meaning it's a parody.
Right, of course.
Mockumentary, rockumentary, mock rockumentary. But actually, in some ways, I think it's a documentary. And it's a documentary of a bunch of pretty smart people, all of whom probably at some point had a group they thought was going to save the world and have been deeply disappointed and disgusted by what happened to that form of music. So that it only could have been made, I think, at the time it was made, mm-hmm. at the turn of from the 70s to the 80s, when we really had, we knew as much as we knew about music and we felt the way we felt about that kind of music, to really, really take on its, not just its obvious targets, the group, but its sort of backstage targets, like myself and the record executive, you know, and all the sort of bits and pieces, the record company, you know, Bobby Fleckman, all those wonderful characters who gave the whole thing its texture, that sort of transforms the whole enterprise into a whole rather than just being a musical parody. It's a moment in time that these cameras caught when, you know, this very smart group of actors were feeling a certain way and saying certain things.
Do fans of that movie, I mean, how do they react to you? How do they react to you? Like, I mean, people who love Spinal Tap, and I think they probably internalize it more than they probably should.
Yeah. Well, what I've found, I mean, the most amazing thing, I mean, like just last night I was at dinner in Sarasota, of all places, mm-hmm. Florida, and some very young busboy, white, obviously, white Floridian busboy, unusual in Florida, but came up to me in this rather swank restaurant and said, I hate to ask you this, but you just look awfully like, he didn't use the word awfully either. I realize I'm doing this in a totally English accent.
This is a very terrible impression you're doing of the Sarasota busboy, but we'll forgive you this time.
Right. So, yeah, but I do apologize, but you look an awful lot like that actor in Spinal Tap. And I said, thank you very much. I am that actor, you know. And but he, this kid, couldn't have been more than 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And he was just like blown away that he'd met someone from Spinal Tap. It was like, he said, I've watched it so many times, I can't count them. He's 19. I mean, there must be a fairly finite number of times he could have watched it. But I found that for sort of mini generations.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to go on.
I mean, I think any, I don't know, I don't want to be gender specific on either side of this, but I think a lot of us are introduced to it when we're, you know, 15, 16 years old, maybe a little bit younger than that, because that's when you get into music too, right? And
right.
If you're like me, you get into comedy, and it's obviously just becomes part of the canon of things that anyone who's a teenager would watch.
Right, right.
Even the, even millennials, even the people using Snapchat today, it's still a part of
that. Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I must say, I love that part of it. It's not like, it's just people who watched it when it first came out or first went into video and so forth. It does seem to be enduring in some way. But I think to some degree, it's just the, because I mean, a lot of the people who, like that kid, I'm sure doesn't listen to anything like, you know, the things that we were, that we were parodying, or even probably isn't even aware of what we were parodying. But it's just, it's actually a very interesting question. I mean, it's not one I should really be answering or trying to answer, I guess, but it is interesting that when you pull it apart, it doesn't make a lot of sense. That I mean, other than just the, you know, the fact that it's a well-made movie and it's got funny scenes, it doesn't seem to make its hold on people, especially musicians. I mean, the number of musicians over the years, I mean, some quite eminent ones, you know, mm-hmm. who've either come up to me or I've heard about, you know, from other people, who say, this is exactly what it's like to be a musician on the road. You know, it's uncanny how many things there are that are just so spot on.
As the years have gone on and the they've done some
spinal... Oh, I have to tell you one thing.
That, yes, please.
One, my best fan story. This is my Spinal Tap fan story, which is that when it first broke out, like, which it was a lot to do with the VHS revolution, mm-hmm. actually. I mean, Spinal Tap did terribly in theaters, but it did fantastically on video. So this would have been around 86 or 87. And I get into a cab, and the cab driver is a classic acid casualty, right? I mean, he has stringy hair in a crunchy, whatever you call them, down to his ass, and he's got dark glasses, and you know, definitely looking the worst for wear, even though it's 10 o'clock in the morning. So he eyes me through in the mirror. And after a while, he says, "Hey, man, weren't you in that movie about the rock band?" And I said, "Yeah, Spinal Tap." He said, "Yeah, yeah. You know, I used to know that group before they made that movie."
He knew them back when they did their more doo-wop stuff, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's right. Yeah, he knew them back in London in the 60s.
Right, right.
Skiffle group.
So, all right, so let's move on to Spy, because that's around the same time.
No, Spy. When did Spy's first issue? It was 86, but that sounds too early. It was either 86 or 87. But anyway, that's late 80s, early 90s.
What am I missing? So there's a gap I've missed between Spinal Tap and Spy. What's going on in the 80s? Are you allowed to talk about?
Well, one of the things that's going on a little earlier was I had met at the Lampoon. A pair of British, I wouldn't call them cartoonists exactly, although what they did at the time was a form of editorial cartoon. But what they had perfected was, and they worked with the big newspapers in London at that point, they perfected a way of doing photographic sculptures. That they made sculptures out of something called plasticine, which is like silly putty, of hideous, wonderful caricatures of public figures, and then put them in outrageous circumstances and shot them. And so they had these fantastic editorial cartoons that were, you know, very convincing caricatures. They did a very funny piece for the Lampoon about the EU and all its various denizens, and I became fast friends with these. The names were Peter Fluck and Roger Law. And after I left the Lampoon, I kept in touch with them. And at one point, we started talking about what it would be like, because the Muppets were like the biggest thing on television at that point. What it would be like to actually take, you know, their dollies and turn them into real puppets, so that you'd have moving satirical caricatures of people instead of just stills, and they'd been thinking along the same lines. So anyway, over the next few years, several years, we gradually developed this idea and got the technology actually from the Muppets, very largely, of how to work these. They were the same size as the Muppets, you know, like over the, with one arm up the puppet, that kind of thing. And then another arm comes around. So eventually Central Television in England bought it, and we called it Spitting Image. I mean, I've been knocking television a lot, but I mean, this was really good television. I mean, amazingly good television, and very harsh satire. I mean, the kind that I like, the kind that's got a real pungency to it. And it ran. I had a quarrel with my co-producers on the show, decided to leave, but the show ran for like 9 years. It was huge show in England.
And you were involved all 9 years, or had?
No. I was involved in the development and in the first season, which I co-produced. Actually got a BAFTA nomination. I got a BAFTA nomination for that.
Very nice.
Yeah.
9 years, like, that seems like a long time for something to be on BBC or on.
It was on Central. It was on ITV.
Right.
It wasn't on BBC.
But usually those things don't go past like two or three.
No,
series,
this was a phenomenon. I mean, it survived so long in the very heated sort of TV comedy atmosphere. You're right. I mean, normally in England, TV series don't last nearly that long.
Yeah.
But it was an institution. I mean, everybody watched it on Sunday night, you know.
It's amazing.
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back. Tony, we got to come up with a promo. Our listeners don't know enough about all the great stuff the Final Edition does. Even when we tell them, it's all this like blah, 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 dot, 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 www, URL crap. No one gets what that is on radio. They just tune it out.
Well, I have the perfect way to hold their attention while we give them the goods.
When I was at the National Lampoon in the 70s, our most famous cover had a cute mutt with a 38 Magnum to its head and the legend, "Buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog."
Yeah, I remember that, but how does that help us? It was a visual image for a magazine.
Meet Freckles.
Freckles? Oh, there. Good boy.
Yay!
What's the matter then?
Also, meet my 38 Magnum.
Jesus Christ, you have a gun? Don't wave that thing around here. Is that thing loaded?
Sure is. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. If you don't stay tuned to this promo while Jeff gives you all the necessary info about our fabulous website and our fabulous YouTube channel and other fabulous stuff we do, I will shoot this dog.
Jesus, man, take the gun out of that defenseless animal's ear.
Give him a good, Jeff.
Oh, my God, poor Freckles. Okay, fine. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour, you want more of what we do, go to thefinaledition.com. Our radio airs on this network on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 8, as well as Wednesday at midnight. We've also got an album, we've got a Twitter feed, we've got a great YouTube channel, Facebook, everything you can want at thefinaledition.com.
Now, tell them to tap all that into their iPhones or leave themselves an audio memo.
No, I won't. I told them enough, Tony. I'm calling SSK.
Tell them, or the dog gets it. I'm cocking the gun right now.
Okay, listeners, please, write this down. Thefinaledition.com. Thefinaledition.com. Go there for everything you want from the Final Edition, or this crazy old British coot is going to plug old Freckles.
Okay, that wasn't so hard, was it? Come here, Freckles, you dumb old chum. Hey, get down! Get down! Get away from me! Get, you crazy cunt!
Good job, Freckles!
Get away.
Him! Sick him! Oh, yeah, this is Jeff Kreisler for the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Midnight on Wednesday.
No, Freckles, put that thing down! You don't have opposable thumbs! No.
April 24th. Everything comes back.
Everything?
Everything comes back. All the shows you've been missing. Game of Thrones, Veep, Silicon Valley.
That's amazing.
That book you left in your sister's car that was gone for a year.
Hey!
It comes back. April 24th.
Thanks.
1992 gold medal Olympian Christy Yamaguchi. Where has she been? Yamaguchi ain't telling, but she comes back.
Okay.
Remember that dog? That dog that Mom and Dad said ran away from home?
Mr. Nutters?
Mr. Nutters is back, and he's better than ever.
Where has he?
That train of thought, toot toot, pulls into station 424. Those cargo shorts you gave to Goodwill? On April 24th, the prodigal pockets return.
That really wasn't the... Wait, Papa?
Your dad went out for smokes 17 years ago, and he comes back on Big 2-4.
They were Marlboro Lights. Forgive me.
Remember the sun?
You mean that sun?
Stop pointing at the decoy sun, because soon you won't have to. April 24th, the sun is back.
Why would anyone steal the sun?
Remember that baby tooth?
No.
Yes.
Please, no?
On April 24th, April 24th comes back, and it's more April 24th-y than ever. Plus, special guest star, April 23rd, one night before the main event. It's the doubleheader you won't want to miss, and in fact, you can't miss. April 24th, everything comes back.
Jon Snow?
Except possibly Jon Snow.
Sometimes we all feel alone in a crowd.
Or have trouble sleeping.
Sometimes it's so difficult to concentrate.
Most of the time you feel fine. You just want to get high as fuck.
That's why there's pills. You could take pills to normalize your social anxiety.
But you really take them because they make the world sound like womp womp womp. What's in pills, you ask?
A lot of love.
L-O-V-E is an acronym for lithium, oxycontin, valium, and ephedrine. Ask your doctor to write you a prescription for pills as long as he's cool.
Talk to your doctor about pills if you sometimes feel sad or angry.
Or if you ever feel...
Habit-forming pills are an essential treatment for those suffering from anxiety and depression, or for people like us.
Who like to pop one and go to Disneyland on a Wednesday. Pills may cause a feeling of awesomeness. Tell your friends if you begin feeling way chill, bro. Double your dosage if you see your parents, plan on seeing your parents, or just cause, brah.
Pills. Get back to doing what you love.
Being high.
What's it look like out there?
The dogs have finished eating the dead. Now they're eating the weak and the small.
Acid rain destroyed the roof and the bunker. I mean, it's only a matter of time before our skin is gone.
Babies are carrying knives.
Earthquakes are coming every 6 minutes.
The rice, it isn't rice anymore. It burns now.
There's only one thing we can do to survive.
I know. We must. We must get jobs at Walmart.
Yes, the only safe place anymore is a nice, climate-controlled Walmart. Small businesses are failing, and the air outside is toxic. But inside the store, you'll be stocking shelves with bargain pillowcases, fitted sheets, toys, crackers, and more. Plus, employees enjoy our generous benefits package. Benefits include being allowed to stay in the store. Remember, death is everywhere, so come on in, fill out an application, join the family, don't unionize, and make just enough money to get to and from work. Walmart, where else are you gonna go?
And now, what if Socrates had held his dialogues on Facebook? A dialectic in one act.
Socrates was posting a picture of his lunch as he sat with Glaucon, the son of Ariston, when Polymarchus remarked on his feed,
"Socrates, you have posted a picture of a chicken cheese steak with garlic fries. Is this the ideal sandwich?"
To this, Socrates replied,
"It is neither ideal nor not ideal. For by posting many sandwiches, I hope to perceive the true form of sandwich, which transcends individual sandwiches."
Then Cleitophon, the son of Aristonymus, whom Socrates had never met personally, but who seemed to know most of the people Socrates knew, responded,
"Stop being mealy-mouthed and just say your favorite sandwich. Mine is roast beef. It's people like you who are killing the Democratic Party."
"But stay, dear Cleitophon,"
Socrates responded,
"for I wish to understand. Do you ever eat other sandwiches?"
"It must be admitted,"
Cleitophon said,
"then let us imagine human beings living in an underground den. Every sandwich they have seen is merely the shadow of the true form of sandwich, which exists outside the cave, and which comes with a choice of coleslaw or fries, which are also in their true form."
But Cleitophon did not answer, for Cleitophon had gone back to cyberstalking his ex-girlfriend. Instead, Socrates received a reply from Cephalus, a guy Socrates sort of knew back in high school, but not really. Cephalus posted the ugliest possible photo of Hillary Clinton with the caption,
"How can you tell when Hillary is lying? Answer, her lips are moving."
"My dear Cephalus,"
Socrates said,
"how does this concern the ideal form of sandwiches? Also, can you indeed verify that former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is a liar when PolitiFact says otherwise?"
"Hitler was a socialist, just like Bernie Sanders,"
replied that guy that Socrates kind of, sort of, didn't exactly know in high school. Socrates was about to ask whether the word socialist, or indeed any other word, was true to the nature of its object, when Thrasymachus, whom Socrates used to work with at Staples, said,
"Can you tell us whether the ideal sandwich is the club sandwich? For it is the most sandwichy of all sandwiches, consisting, as it does, of extra sandwich."
"I know one thing, that I know nothing,"
Socrates replied.
"Of course, all you liberals know nothing,"
said that guy from high school again.
"If you want to be educated, check this out."
And he posted a video called "Hillary is a Serial Murderer," which was 2 hours long. 2 fucking hours.
Okay. I tried fact-checking about 3 minutes of this thing, and none of it holds up,
Socrates said. He then called the video
a goddamned waste of my time.
Which, if you know Socrates, was really out of character.
Can we please just talk about the sandwich?
Then Glaucon, who was sitting across from Socrates, literally right across the table from him at the restaurant, answered Socrates' post, saying,
"Where you at, dog?"
Then Socrates told a story about son of Arminius, dying and coming back to life, or some shit like that. It was too long and I didn't read it, and then I stopped reading the post altogether. I learned nothing.
And this has been What If Socrates Had Held His Dialogues on Facebook.
Thank you for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Humans providing their voices to the Final Edition include Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Chrysler, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jessica Park, Barry Lenk, Ebby Parker, John Marshall, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, James Mount, Rob Miller, Leah Krinsky, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Touchell, Darby Worley, Ben Kirchner, Gil Barron, and Bridget Fitzgerald. Writers for the Final Edition include Bruce Cherry, James Mount, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Ben Kirchner, Bridget Fitzgerald, Rob Gordon, Gil Barron, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Jessica Park, Ebby Parker, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lenk, Leah Krinsky, John Marshall, Kurt Weitzman, Leslie Shapira, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition was produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production and direction by Barry Lenk. Audio editing and sound design by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition is the property of the Final Edition LLC. Copyright 2016.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.